You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Cudd, joined by my co-host Patrick Fitzgerald. And today we're joined by Pitcherlist Dynasty Manager Matt Heckman to talk about National League hitting prospects that are likely to debut in 2026. Matt, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah. Patrick, also, how are you doing after a little bit of a break from our last episode?
I'm good. I just started my first draft, so draft season is underway for me. It's a NFBC 50 slow draft, so I got Acuna, Tatis, and Ketel Marte so far, so yeah, so far so good.
Nice. I'm doing my first draft. It's a keeper cut listener league with Chad and Pete.
Okay, sure.
So it's a keeper format, but I won the league last year, so that was fun. So now I gotta defend the title.
Nice. Yeah, I haven't started doing any redrafts league yet. I'm kind of doing some prep for some first year player drafts that I'm working on, and a couple of I just joined a dynasty league today, so we'll have to see how that team shakes out. Apparently, they finished not well last year, so I think that's why it's an orphan team. But nonetheless, it's exciting to just getting into draft season. It's kind of crazy. Like about a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting, which is kind of nuts. We did have a similar conversation last month with Martin Sokolsky about AL hitting prospects. So now we got to go to the National League and talk to Matt. But before we get into all of that, Matt, I know that the Dynasty team is like ramping up a lot of content over this past month. Can you just talk a little bit about kind of the stuff that you guys are putting up on the site and what resources people can look to as they're prepping for their Dynasty seasons this upcoming year?
Yeah, so the Dynasty team, I mean, we've been working since the end of last year. Obviously, content slows down a little bit, but it's been pretty nonstop over there. We have some good first-year player draft articles that went out between October through December for anybody getting ready for one of those. Now in January, we kind of flipped the script to 2026, and so we have top prospect articles for each team that have been going out pretty much daily, or as fast as we can put them out. As fast as we can write them and the editors can edit them between everybody's schedule. But so those have been going up. We're all the way through the National League. I think we're all the way through the American League East, and we've started to move now to the American League Central. So that's January, and then February and March leading into the season, the content will continue to be pretty consistent. We'll have player comps articles. So we wrote a few of those last year looking at prospects and what fantasy managers can expect, not necessarily from a real life perspective, but what is a ceiling, what is a floor for different prospects. We'll have different breakout articles, bust articles, spring training previews, everything really dynasty managers should need to get ready for 2026 and beyond.
Awesome. Yeah, it's obviously a lot of content coming out from you guys. I'll definitely be checking out those first year player draft articles just to make sure, who's worth picking up. I know we had, who did we have on a couple episodes ago? It was Jack Mueller, just talking about some of the international free agents. So a little exciting, obviously, with those coming over, but there's still plenty of 2025 draft guys to think about in the first year player draft. So definitely, something I'll be checking out on the site over the next couple of weeks, for sure. But before we get into the rest of the episode, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. Send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email, thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, so we are going to talk about hitting prospects to debut in 2026 in the National League. This was an article that you wrote probably a little over a month ago now at this point, but still pretty relevant. And, like you mentioned, all the National League top prospect previews are out on the site as well. So we've got a little bit more detailed write-ups for these guys as well up on the site. We're going to focus on the stars that you kind of listed. There's, you had four different categories. So stars are players that, you kind of think would be impactful fantasy assets for years to come. And then we're also going to talk about a few starters as well. These are guys that you kind of defined as solid overall prospects, can be fantasy relevant, but maybe not can't miss prospects. But then there's also replacement level guys, and then just a guy sort of players, people that, you know, might shuffle in and out of your dynasty teams a little bit, but might end up being just waiver wire guys to obviously still keep an eye out on if they, you know, make their debut in the majors this upcoming seasons, but not necessarily guys that you have to go out and make a trade for or, you know, hold on to in your leagues. So, yeah, before we kind of get into all of that, though, just like, yeah, when you were going through the article and coming up with guys to write about, what was your process look like for there?
I mean, I would kind of look at each team. There's a list of prospects that I know just off the top of my head. Like a lot of the guys we're going to talk about today, guys that stand out, guys that I know are either toward the upper level of the major leagues already or are going to be by the end of 2026, just based on talent. So those guys were easy inclusions. Those are the guys that really fantasy managers are going to want to worry about during drafts or even during early parts of the season on the waiver wire. I know the stash list will start coming out in the regular season and they'll all be included in there, I'm sure. And then after that, I think me and Martin kind of had like a quota, I want to say. We were trying to get between 40 to 50 prospects from each league when we did hitters and pitching prospects. And so then it was just going team by team and creating a list of these are prospects that are on the 40-man roster. That makes it easy. If they got added to the 40 this year, they're on the 40 already. Odds are pretty high. They're probably going to make their debut in 2026. After that, it's looking at organizational depth. Okay, is a major league team weak on a certain position? Do they need to give reinforcements from the minor leagues? Something like that. And then after that, it was just looking at, that's where a lot of the Justa guys come from. Guys who are in AAA, they might be a little bit older. They've been around a while. They're not on the 40-man. But if the team has a couple of injuries, they're probably the next man up, and they might have some fantasy relevance for a couple of games here or there.
Yeah, awesome. All right, well, we are going to start in the NL East with the Phillies, with a guy that, honestly, I was hoping the Twins would have traded for when they traded oh my gosh, how am I already forgetting his name?
Durant.
When they traded Durant, yeah, to the Phillies. Instead, we got Tait and McGabe instead. But yeah, Aiden Miller. He's one of these guys that, you know, probably is going to make a big impact this upcoming season.
Yeah, Aiden Miller is a really, really refined prospect. I mean, he's one of the safest prospects, and that I feel like gets an eye roll a lot of times from dynasty managers, like, why are you targeting a safe prospect? But just from his overall skill set, like, he's got speed, he's got a polished approach, he understands the strike zone, he controls the barrel well, it's simple at the plate, there's not a lot of moving parts. He's gonna steal a lot of bases, he hits a lot of line drives, like, he's safe. And then what makes Miller so exciting, why he falls into the star category, is he's safe with upside. I mean, he stole 59 bases last season after a little bit of a slow start, which was a lot of BABIP-induced issues. He slashed 356, 492, 596 from July 27th forward. There's power in his swing. He's got really quick hands. And so he really does a little bit of everything for dynasty managers. I don't know if he'll play shortstop. I don't know if he'll play third, if he'll play second. I think coming out of the draft originally, I kind of figured he would slide over to third base. He's stuck at shortstop and he's looked good there. But with Trey Turner, shortstop's a little bit more locked down in Philadelphia, barring an injury. So I think you could see him play a little bit more third base if they get creative, they move the lineup around, if they end up trading Alec Boehm ever, or if Bryson Stott struggles, if he's struggling against lefties still and they don't want to go to Edmundo Sosa, he could play second base too. So the bat's going to play for dynasty managers really regardless of where he lands on the diamond. But yeah, you're looking at 20 home run to 25 home run upside. It's not 30 home run power probably, but it doesn't need to be. He's going to drive the ball into the gaps, hit for good average, walk a lot, and steal 30 plus bases. So he's got a really good overall skill set for dynasty managers to kind of target.
Yeah, so on Miller's profile, you know, obviously he's been a highly rated prospect for a while, but it seemed like he was maybe struggling while being challenged at a level until kind of the last half of last season, where he just absolutely went on a tear and got up to AAA. Obviously, he's still really young. You know, this is his age 22 season, but he's not actually going to be 22 until June. So a major league assignment, you know, might be really challenging for him just at this stage in his career. Do you have any concerns about, you know, his performance if he does get to the majors this year? And do you have any, sounds like you don't really have any long-term concerns, but do you think there might be some growing pains for him at least this year?
I think there could be growing pains. I think even when he was struggling last year, though, the base was still really good. He was still making contact a lot. He was still walking a lot. And he's going to steal bases once he gets on. So I feel like my concern for this year isn't so much with Miller's production. I think the power might take some time to develop against major league pitching. So maybe he's not a 20 to 25 home run bat right off the jump at the major league level. Like, maybe he takes some time. I think, like you said, we really saw the power numbers tick up as he started to settle in last season. So maybe he's more of a 10 to 15 home run bat to start. But he's going to steal bases. He's going to get on. He's going to walk at the very least, even if he struggles to hit a little bit. So I think that's all a positive. I think the issue this year is really playing time. Where does Miller fit into that infield? That infield's pretty full. Like, I wish Aiden Miller was playing the position that Justin Crawford's going to get to play, because I think Miller is a lot better than Justin Crawford, and there would be clear opportunity. But I think from a production standpoint, I'm not super worried that if he gets a call, if he'll be fantasy relevant. I think he will be fantasy relevant even as early as this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, you know, for those speed needy teams out there.
Yeah.
So staying in the NL East, the next guy we're going to talk about is the Mets outfielder, Carson Bench. He's a guy who seemingly, I think, will get more and more helium just as the Mets continue to make moves, but not in the outfield, right? The Mets are just amassing a ton of infielders, but it looks like Bench might have a runway to playing time. So what do you see in his profile that, you know, has you labeling him as a star for, you know, for as a prospect and kind of moving forward too?
Yeah, I love Carson Bench. I think exactly what you said. He's going to get more and more helium as the draft season moves along and there are glaring holes in the Mets outfield. I'm hoping to take him in that keeper cut league, so hopefully I can provide some updates on that. But Bench is really good. I have him ranked higher than Aiden Miller in terms of just overall prospect rankings. Bench has so much upside, it's ridiculous. I mean, you want to talk about game power, like his swing when he connects. Obviously the left-handed swing always looks a little bit prettier when you hit a home run than a right-handed swing, but his swing when it connects, I mean, he hits mammoth home runs, just like absolutely ridiculous. And his swing really isn't even designed to hit balls out of the park. Like, he doesn't get a ton of launch on it, so I think there's still more room to unlock game power. But when he does, man, that ball flies off the bat. So he only hit 15 home runs last year. I think there's 25-30 home run potential there. Right now, he's going to be a doubles monster. He's going to use the whole field. He's going to drive the ball into the gaps, which is fine for a prospect. In AAA last year, his average exit velocity was 92.1 miles an hour. So, like, there is significant jump in that bat. And then beyond that, last year was his first full professional season, and he struck out 17.7% of the time, walked 13.1% of the time. The contact skills were really, really good. There's speed in his profile. He stole 22 bases. There might not be as much stolen base potential as there was with Miller, but I also think it's a little bit safer from a frame standpoint. I think Bench is a little bit better of an athlete, and as they continue to grow and mature, I think there's a chance eventually Bench passes Miller in terms of just stolen base upside, just with the way their frames are built. So yeah, Bench is one of my favorite prospects, not only to debut in 2026. Like you said, the Mets have a lot of holes, but I think just overall, Carson Bench is a top 10 easy prospect in all of baseball, if not a top 5 prospect in all of baseball.
Yep. I'm kind of curious. Roster Resource right now has Bench as the opening day left fielder, which, you know, there's still some free agents, right? The Mets could go out and grab someone like a Cody Bellinger to fill that spot. But I don't know. Any idea on, like, just with the likelihood right now that he makes that opening day roster? Do you think he's at least, like, quality-wise good enough to be in that position right now?
I think he is. I mean, even though last year was his first year, he was a college bat. And so he's already pretty polished at the plate. Like I said, good walk rate, good contact skills. So I feel like that's really what I look for, is something that can be exposed at the next level. Like, if you're chasing a lot, if you're overly aggressive, a couple years ago, Christian Encarnacion Strand was coming through the system. It's like, guys, he swings at everything. Like, that's an issue at the major league level. And so just you remove a little bit of that floor, there's a higher chance that somebody struggles in spring training or isn't ready. I mean, the nerves can get to anybody, right? Like, he might struggle in spring training. They might opt to give him more seasoning. But I think he's got a really, really solid base to build on. And so I think he's ready now. And if he performs in spring training, I don't see why the Mets wouldn't give him that shot.
All right, well, moving on to a bit of a surprising player, I think, on this list in terms of prospects that might debut in 2026. But Jesus Mare of the Brewers, he's only 18 years old. He's just played, I believe it was 5 games in Double A last season. So a little bit of a runway for him to make it to the majors, at least in 2026. But yeah, what kind of... You know, he's obviously very toolsy sort of player, a lot of good plate discipline, you know, good speed, good hit tool. But, you know, what is kind of the Cliff Notes version of Mare and what makes him so exciting?
I think, like you said, twitchy athleticism. That's what it is. You watch him play. He looks different. The bat kind of sounds different coming off the ball. I know that's like very high level analysis, but sometimes you watch a player and it... Sometimes you watch a player, and I stand by that. They just have it. You can watch a player who puts up great numbers in AAA, but they don't have it. They don't have the athleticism that it takes. And like you said, Mare is still so young. Like, there's so much time for him to develop more. Like, the game power right now, it's not there. Like, just he hit 6 home runs last year. Like, that's not a ton of power, but he has the frame to really grow into it. The bat, like I said, the ball sounds different when it comes off the bat. The home runs he does hit, they look pretty. Like, they look like a swing that's going to be able to drive the ball. He swings it well from both sides. He's got really, really refined contact skills. And so he's not just a twitchy athletic. I feel like a lot of times those are projectable prospects, or prospects who have a lot of flaws. I feel like Sebastian Walcott's kind of calmed that down a little bit, but I feel like he's won over the last couple of years that he's got the twitchy athleticism, but he's also got the holes in his swing, and the swing can be big at times, and he struggles with pitch recognition. Like, Mare doesn't have a lot of that. He's got good speed, good athleticism. He's going to stick at shortstop. I included him in the list because there's a chance he debuts. I mean, he made it to Double A last year. If he sets the world on fire, the Brewers have holes in their infield. I mean, Joey Ortiz got everyday playing time last year as one of the worst offensive players in baseball. So there's a path there. The Brewers have a bunch of other third base prospects at the higher levels of the major leagues, but none with quite the star power that Mare has. And so I think if he sets the world on fire, I don't see why they wouldn't push him. I think it's unlikely. I would not bet on a debut if I was betting on Jesus Mare to make a debut. But if he debuts, that means he's setting the world on fire, which means that game power is ticked up, that speed is there. He's already got the contact skills. He's got the twitchy athleticism. So he's got number one overall prospect potential. He's got number one overall fantasy player potential, if everything clicks. But like you said, he's so young that he's only 18 years old, 19 in May. Like, he's got a lot of development left still. So seeing him in the upper levels of the minor leagues more consistently in 2026 will be a good test for how that athleticism turns into on-field results, I think.
And in terms of the speed with Mare, obviously he stole 47 bases last year, but we do see a lot of guys who kind of run wild in like the lower minors and then reined it in a little bit when they get to the big leagues. Do you have like a, you know, what you project for him at, you know, once he reaches this kind of prime as a stolen base threat in the majors?
All right, let me find the Excel spreadsheet I was working on, because I'm working on a shortstop prospect comps article for whatever, and I did do Mare. At his ceiling, this was be like year over year, not obviously in his rookie year. In his ceiling, I pegged him at 280, 20 homers, 30 steals, 11% walk rate. So I don't think his speed, like you said, like I don't think he's a 47 steal player, especially as that body fills out and as he adds power and muscle and some of that game power, raw power develops a little bit more. I don't think he steals 47 bases. I think he can steal 30 bases. At his floor, I had him at 250, 12 homers and 20 steals. That's really the power never fully developed. It doesn't turn into anything. The contact skills are still good, but without the game power, the EVs are probably a little bit lower. He fills out his frame. He's only a 20 stolen base player. So that's what I had as his ceiling and floor. And then the true outcome, I put it at like 70%. I had him at 271, 18-ish, 17 to 18 homers, 27 steals a year. So that would be kind of my base level projection for Mabe.
Nice. All right. Well, staying in the NL Central, moving to a guy who I think most people are expecting to, if not debut this season, even be on the opening day roster. That's JJ Weatherholt. Before we talk about him, I think there's a fun quirk of, you know, looking at articles that were written a month ago where you basically said any trade of Brendan Donovan or Nolan Arenado opens up a playing time for Weatherholt. And lo and behold, Arenado is no longer with the Cardinals. And so there's a little bit of a hole there at third base now for Weatherholt to potentially fill. But yeah, how do you explain the hype around Weatherholt? I mean, there was already a little bit of a hype that he might even get called up to the majors last season, ended up playing 47 games in AAA. But yeah, why is there kind of this idea that, you know, he could be, you know, a really good player in the majors next year?
I feel like during first year player drafts last year, his power kind of got overlooked a little bit. It was kind of viewed as, yeah, Bezzana and Weatherholt, like they were drafted at the top. They were kind of both profiling as more second base prospects. They're not the biggest guys. I mean, he's only 5'10". He's not the most projectable player, but man, he can put a charge into a baseball. And I mean, you saw that in 2024 when he showed up at low A. We got EV numbers and they were high. And then people, I think, still weren't fully ready to buy in. Like, I don't know, maybe the power is better than we thought. It was only a 9.1% home run per fly ball rate in 29 games at low A. And the power's just gotten better and better and better at every level. I mean, that jumped to 12.1% at double A in 62 games. And at triple A, it jumped to 20.8%, that home run per fly ball. His average exit velocity was 91.4. He's got really good feel for his pull side. He's not a pull happy hitter, and he's not a fly ball happy hitter. He's really a line drive guy that will drive it into the gaps. But when he gets to his pull side, the power plays up really, really well. And you see that in the home run per fly balls, which is such a sticky stat when translating from minor league to major league. I think it was John Anderson years ago did a actual statistical study into that. And that was an extremely detailed and high correlation stat. So there's a lot of power there. I feel like every guy in the star category I'm just gushing over because, well, I labeled them all stars and they've all fallen inside of my really top 10 prospects in baseball so far. So Weatherholt's no different. The contact skills are really, really good. That's something I like and I look for in a prospect. If I'm going to rank you that high, you need to have a stable base. Weatherholt has it. He makes contact at a good rate. He controls the zone well. He walks. Like I said, he hits a lot of line drives. I think he's the safest of all the prospects we've mentioned so far in terms of fantasy value. I think the hit tool is the best with Weatherholt from all of them. And then he's got the power. I think the power is still better than people are giving him credit for. I think there's 20 home run, 25 home run upside in his bat. I think he's got good speed. I wouldn't call it great speed, but he's got good baseball instincts and he's profiles to be a good runner and a threat to steal. So I think Weatherholt's the safest guy. I also have the projection for him. I did him as well. The ceiling, I put 305, 22 homers, 25 steals, 12% walk rate. Really, really, really good fantasy baseball player. At his floor, I have 275, 15 homers, 12 steals, 20% strikeout rate, 8% walk rate. So regardless, he's going to be a good player. He can play all three infield positions. He can play second, he can play short, he can play third. They trade Arenado, third base looks open. Second base, they can put Donovan in the outfield if they really wanted to and play him at second over Gourmand. So I think there's opportunity for playing time. I think he cracks the opening day roster. I think he's a fantasy relevant prospect from opening day forward.
Yeah, he does kind of seem like the guy who's closest to his ceiling, I would say, like of this list, you know, just given the age and the really good minor league track record in the upper minors so far.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
All right. Moving on to Connor Griffin, who I will admit, I think if most people weren't really following Dynasty talk over the past couple of years, or really, I mean, just since 2024 when Griffin was drafted, it kind of feels like his rise almost feels like it's come out of nowhere. Yes, he was a first round pick. He was the ninth pick in the draft. But it also, from him going from there to essentially being a pretty much a consensus number one prospect in baseball, a little surprising, I think, if you just weren't following prospects that closely. But yeah, Griffin, I think most importantly, the Pirates have already said they're going to give him a chance to earn an everyday role in spring training this upcoming year. What do you like about him? Like, he's only 19. He's still really young, but it seems like this is a guy who could potentially take the baseball world by storm this year.
Yeah, number one prospect in baseball. I don't really think it's – I love Weatherholt. I want to put him at one. I want to put Benj at one. Connor Griffin is the number one prospect in baseball. I think it was last offseason after he was drafted ninth overall, there was video – I don't remember if he was working with Driveline or one of those groups, or if he was – there was just video of him posting EVs from the batting cage and working on his swing and making tweaks to his swing. And you saw those as a kid who just got drafted out of high school and was already a first round pick. So you already saw the work ethic. You saw the EVs show up there. And that's not everything. That's not going to instantly translate to professional success. But you saw a work ethic there that you don't always see with other prospects. And so that stood out. The Dynasty community really started to buy into that. They bought into the tools, the size. I mean, he's what, 6 foot four? Yeah, 6 foot four, 225 pounds. He's a great athlete. He can play center field. He can play shortstop. He's good at both of them. He's an excellent, excellent, excellent athlete. And so on top of that, and then the success just rolled in from really the start of 2025, and it didn't stop. 338 in low A, 325 in high A, 337 in double A. 9 home runs, 7 home runs, 5 home runs, finished 21 homers, 65 stolen bases. Like, he's only 19 years old. He'll turn 20 in April. So he's not the youngest high school prospect to come out, but it doesn't matter when you're putting up results like that. He does everything fantasy baseball managers want to see. He's got great speed. He's going to steal bases. He's got 40 plus stolen base potential. He's got power that he's growing into more and more. He's not going to hit fewer home runs than he's hitting right now. He's got a good hit tool. The hit tool is the one area that I don't think is a complete product. So if you're going to find some risk in his profile, it's there. But it's difficult to argue with a 333 batting average as an 18, 19-year-old in his first professional season. So at that point, I think you're really pulling at strings there, trying to find a flaw in him. His ceiling projection, I gave him 290, 30 homers, 45 stolen bases. I mean, that's 101 player in fantasy, really, once Ohtani stops controlling the baseball world. So Connor Griffin is somebody, as soon as he's in the major leagues, he's going to be a fantasy impact player,
I think. I kind of wish he had some AAA time so we had some Statcast numbers from him. Yeah. It'd be really cool. But nonetheless, I mean, meteoric rise from A to from single A to double A last year, going through three different levels of the minors. And I mean, it sounds like the Pirates are more than happy to have him compete for the job. I mean, Nick Gonzalez is currently penciled in as the shortstop, I think, for the Pirates. And as much as I have enjoyed following Nick's career, I don't think he is exactly the most immovable object in that lineup. So it definitely feels like, you know, they are, you know, at least hoping that Griffin can take a step in spring training and really grab that job.
Yeah, I don't know if it was during his time in low A or if Lance Brzdowski, I don't know how to say his name, but if he just has inside Statcast data, but he hit 16 balls over 110 miles an hour last year. So the power is real it's not just fluffed up minor league numbers that are going to kind of slow down. The EVs aren't that good. The power is real. The speed is real. He's the real deal. He's going to be a phenomenal fantasy asset for years.
Cool.
And obviously the, you know, the opening day roster is in the conversation, but do you feel like he's at least a lock to start in AAA just because, it, you know, obviously the major leagues would be the ideal outcome, but if he's just one stop away, you know, you'd hope to see him kind of earlier in the season.
I would hope, but I wouldn't put it past the Pirates to send him back to AAA. If he's not ready for the major leagues, they might slow play it so they have a chance to promote him again before promoting him to the major leagues, kind of work the service time. They'll do AA, and then he's really good in AA. Oh, well, we got to move him to AAA before we can move him to the majors. They'll spend a month or two there. Service time accumulates, and then he'll find his way to the major leagues. I don't know. Just a guess. I'm going to put it past the Pirates.
It did take them a little bit to get Paul Skeens up. So. all right. Well, moving on to the Dodgers with Josue De Paula, who's an outfielder. I do want to briefly, I guess we'll talk, we're not going to talk about him in a little bit, but I do want to kind of talk just a quick second before we talk about De Paula, about James Tibbs III, because he was traded twice last season. You have him ranked as a starter, so a little bit lower than De Paula, but interesting enough, I guess, with this Dodgers outfield, even though they just signed Kyle Tucker to an insane contract, they actually still have some holes in their outfield right now. Pajes is penciled as the center fielder, Teoscar Hernandez is their left, Kyle Tucker in right, but they don't really have a lot of depth behind them. Alex Call is the only other outfielder that has any major league experience, I think, for them. Specifically talking about Tibbs first, and then we'll talk about De Paula. Between those two, do you think it's more likely that they probably call up Tibbs first, or do you see the Dodgers kind of just going with who's the best between the two and, you know, who cares about age?
Yeah, I think they would call up Tibbs first. I think they have a lot of prospects. I mean, De Paula, they have Zaire Hope, so, and Tibbs, Zach Earhart is also in their system and was another player acquired. They have Ryan Ward. I think Tibbs is a step ahead in his development. I mean, he was a college bat. He went to Florida State. He was traded around a bunch. I think it also kind of depends on what they need. Tibbs isn't very good defensively. Like, I think he's got a lot of polish in the bat, a lot of strike zone understanding, a little bit of a overly patient-ish approach at times, which is why the strikeout rate's a little bit high. I think he's got pretty good power, but Tibbs is not a very good per scouting reports defender. I think there's belief that he could ultimately wind up out of the outfield entirely at a certain point. And so if they're looking for somebody to come up and play center field, it's not going to be Tibbs. But if they're looking for a more polished bat or somebody even that the Dodgers don't necessarily view as an everyday player, if they want to find a platoon guy, if they're looking for some power off the bench, something like that, I think Tibbs is the guy that makes more sense there. I still like Tibbs. I'm talking down, I feel like, on him a little bit. He falls in the starter category and he falls toward the back end of the top 100. There's potential there. There's fantasy relevance there. He hit 20 homers last year, but there's not a ton of speed. The defense isn't very good. So you worry about how that impacts his long-term value. He's also got more value in on-base leagues where his walk rate definitely helps offset some of the strikeout concerns in his profile. So I think Tibbs will get the call first, answer your question that you asked. I think Tibbs gets the call first, but if they're looking for somebody who can play a center field every day, it's not going to be Tibbs.
Okay. Well, then moving on to De Paula, because I think, you know, a little bit more exciting prospect for sure. Younger as well. He's at 20 years old. He finished in AA last season, played 4 games there. So, you know, mostly just spent his entire season in high A last year. What do you like about his tools and, you know, what makes you think that he could potentially make a debut this upcoming year?
De Paula kind of falls into that category with Mate, where I don't think he'll make his debut next year, especially with the Dodgers. I mean, if they need something at the deadline, they're just going to go out and acquire it, right? But I also think if he debuts, it's because he was dominant in the minor leagues. like the kind of dominant that grabs fantasy manager's attention, that would get him pushed through the minor leagues. The raw tools are loud. He's 6'3". He's a big framed guy. He makes good contact. He's got good bat speed. He hit a home run, I think, in the Futures game last year, if I remember correctly. I believe he hit the 3-run home run for the National League or for the international team. But the tools are really loud. The scouting report on him is that his speed is closer to average and will probably end up below average. That's a lot of projection based just on how his 6'3" frame is going to fill out. He stole over 30 bases again last year, so the speed in terms of stolen bases is still showing up in the lower levels of the minor leagues. I'm not positive that's going to continue as he progresses, but what should tick up is the game power. You saw it for the first time really in 2024. It started to show up a little bit. The home run per fly ball rate jumped again in 2025, and he's starting to hit fewer ground balls. I think when I watched him originally as a prospect a couple years ago, his swing looked choppy, and it looked like he was swinging down on the ball more. And the ground ball rate has dropped. It's not super significant, but it has lowered. And when you watch him swing, you can see the attempt to get more launch and lift on the ball, get it to his pull side a little bit. And the frame just has such power. And then you go down to his contact skills. And the contact skills, he had a 78.5% contact rate last year. In 2024, he had a 78.1% contact rate. 2023, 79.2. So the contact skills are really, really good. The walk rate's really, really good. Another on-base guy. The Dodgers seem to like them. They have a bit of a mold there, I think. But and then his ranking as a star really comes down to projecting that there is 30 home run upside there. You haven't seen it shown up in the stat sheet, but the frame suggests that it's there. The home runs he does hit suggest that the raw power is at least there, getting that to just translate a little bit more. He's a kind of bat with those contact skills, raw power, and plate discipline. He could really just take off. And then the fantasy aspect of it is you hope he keeps stealing as he moves up. You hope he doesn't add too much muscle or too much physicality to his frame to slow down too much and lose some of that speed.
Yeah, and I've noticed one thing with DePaul is he needs to be protected from the Rule 5 draft this season. So, you know, by the end of the season. So I think that's also something that might be working in his favor, hopefully, in terms of a promotion. But obviously the Dodgers have, you know, proceeded pretty carefully with him and a lot of their other prospects too.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he makes his debut in 2026. But if he does, he's somebody that fantasy managers definitely need to have on their radar.
Yeah, absolutely. So staying out west, the next guy is another outfielder in the division. That's Ryan Waldschmidt of the Diamondbacks. So give us a little bit of an overview of Waldschmidt's skill set before we, you know, dive into any specific aspect of it.
I don't want to beat my own drum, but I was pounding on Ryan Waldschmidt's name for all of last season, it felt like. He does it all. I mean, he was a 31st overall pick in 2024 out of Kentucky. He went to high A to start 2025. He did a lot of things really well. When you watch him, watching Diamondbacks minor league games, everything is just easy with him. It's not loud. There's not a lot of movement, but there's obvious power there. He's just from his frame. He stands at 6'2". He's big body, but he's an excellent athlete. He moves really, really well in the outfield. He can play any outfield position. He's got really good speed that shows up on the base paths as well. He stole 29 bases last year. You don't have to really worry about the physicality being added like some of these other prospects who might slow down a little bit as they get closer to the major leagues. He should maintain that level of speed, steal 20 to 30 bases. He's got the power, like I mentioned. It's just a really, really smooth and easy swing. Really good line drive rate last season, 25.3%. He should hit for good average. He walks a lot. Pitchers come over the plate and he tends to punish them. Like, Waldschmidt is the kind of profile that I think gets looked over sometimes because he's not a twitchy, athletic kind of prospect. He's just really, really good. He's he's a vanilla prospect, I feel like, in terms of nothing flashy, but he does it all really, really well. And so I'm in on Waldschmidt. I've been in on Waldschmidt. I think he cracks the opening day roster as well. I think there were rumors coming out that he was going to be given a chance to. I think he's the kind of bat that'll play well in spring training. I think he'll impress the major league roster. I think he'll earn a roster spot, and then he'll be on fantasy radars instantly, I think. He's got 20-20 upside, should hit for good average, walks a lot for on-base leagues.
I'm just looking at the Diamondbacks roster, and it's Corbin Carroll and then some guys. I mean, no offense to Blaze Alexander and Alec Thomas, but yeah, I don't think they're necessarily going to be blocking him from making onto that roster if he shines during spring training.
Yeah.
Do you have any concerns about how much he'll steal at the major league level? Just the success rate last year wasn't bad like we see sometimes with some minor leaguers, but he was 29 for 39, so kind of right at that 70 to 75% mark where, you know, guys maybe start running a little bit less if they're getting caught somewhere for going.
A few years ago, I would love to look at – I'm going to pull up the team leaderboards from last year. I feel like Arizona is a team that encourages their guys to run a lot. Maybe that was just a couple of years ago. Yeah, they're pretty middle of the pack. They're 14th last year. I felt like a couple years ago their guys were just running. Maybe that's because they had faster players. But not really. I mean, I don't think he's a – like, he stole 29 bases last year. I wouldn't project him as a 30-base stealer. I wouldn't say that's in his range of outcomes necessarily. I think it settles closer to 20. But I don't think he's a guy that all of a sudden you're going to see him only steal 10 bases. I think the speed is good. The baseball instincts are really good, which help him in the field, helps him on the bases. So a little bit, but not overly concerned.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we are going to now transition from the stars tier to the starters tier. Obviously, there's more guys in the starters tier in the article that we're not going to talk about today, but the first one that we are going to talk about in this tier is a Mets first baseman, and I think sometimes outfielder, so showing a little bit of versatility. That's Ryan Clifford. I was traded over from the Astros a couple years ago. We did talk a little bit earlier about how the Mets are kind of stockpiling infielders right now, which might hurt Clifford's 2026 outlook, but what do you, you know, how do you evaluate his skill set this year? And do you have any concerns, you know, this year and moving forward, just given the apparent logjam now in New York?
Yeah, I definitely have concerns. Clifford's a guy I kind of rotated back and forth between on starter replacement level. His success in the second half of 2025 pushed me into that starter tier. He went on a tear. I think I mentioned the article from June 6th forward, he crushed 21 home runs. 600 plate appearance pace would have been 41 homers during that period. The power is significant. My concern with Clifford has been he doesn't hit for good average, and there are concerns over his ability to handle left-handed pitching. He really struggled against lefties last year. I don't know if I have it in that. 204, 273, 381. Even the year before, his average was better against lefties, but he didn't hit for much power against them. And so as a power hitting, I think he's going to land at first base long term. I don't think he's an outfielder. As a power hitting, low average first baseman with platoon concerns, that's not exactly the best profile to always go after. I think his power surge at the end of last season kind of pushed me into, okay, yeah, let's give him starter potential. He's been BABIPed a little bit. He walks a lot. The contact skills aren't as much of a concern as the over patience. Like the strikeout rate's not driven by very poor contact skills. The strikeout rate is more driven by a patient approach. And so that's a little bit comforting, I guess, in a sense. He hit a lot of line drives last year. That's improved over the last couple of seasons. He's not overly pull happy. It's more just he has all fields power. So that's also a little bit comforting. Clifford, like I said, he's not my favorite profile because I think there's a chance he just ends up as this kind of quad A player where the numbers look good, but he can't hit lefties and he doesn't provide a lot of defensive value. So what is he really doing for the team? And then you mentioned the Mets, they are going to spend, they kind of log jammed infielders. I feel like I don't have long-term concern because the infielders they've gotten, They got Bichette, but they also then got Jorge Polanco and Marcus Semien, and both of those guys feel like they're at the end of their career, not necessarily people that are going to be lineup locks for years to come. So I feel like my concern isn't that he'll get a shot. It's that I'm not overly confident that when he gets his shot, he's going to stick.
Yeah, and it might be something that's more of kind of like a versatile bench role. You know, I was actually looking and he's played like 40 to 50 games in the outfield the last 2 years, which I knew he had played there a little bit, but that was a lot more than I realized. So maybe he's a guy who, you know, can kind of spell some of the veterans, give them off days and like that first base, DH, corner outfield type spots.
Yeah, I didn't realize he played that much in the outfield last year either. I honestly thought it was more at first base. So, yeah, maybe he does that. That I feel like is a good role for him, but that's also a role that too often I feel like we get stuck at AAA and then bounce around a little bit. So,
yeah. All right, moving on to another player, could be decent, Siever King of the Nationals. He was the 10th pick in this 2024 draft coming out of Wake Forest. Had some decent like power speed numbers in that season in college, but hasn't really done much in the majors. Kind of, you mentioned the article, through 125 games, he's only had 6 homers and 30 stolen bases. A little bit smaller guy. But you look at the roster in Washington, it's Brady House at third. It's Nassim Nunez at second. So not exactly guys that are entrenched at those positions. So Siever King, even though he's going to be probably starting in AA this upcoming season, you know, is there any sort of, you know, good projections in his makeup that could potentially push him to, you know, be on the major league roster? And then if he does, you know, what kind of things could we hope out of him?
Yeah, I mean, his path to the major leagues, I think I saw before this article or before this podcast that the Nationals signed Rhys Hoskins or were close to signing Rhys Hoskins. So that complicates things a little bit. Luis Garcia would probably shift back to second base, Nassim Nunez to the bench. Complicates the path for King a little bit if they're going to be paying Hoskins, but it's a one-year deal. Hoskins plays well. They trade him at the deadline and promote prospects. Siever King is somebody who's kind of – the dynasty community's really soured on him. I think they started too high on King. He ranked toward the back half of my – or back end of my top 150 last year. And then the dynasty community's really fallen off on him, and now I feel like I'm somebody who's optimistic. The issue with King is a super aggressive approach. He swings at just about anything. He's got good contact skills. The contact skills aren't bad. 78.4% last year, but his swing rate was 53.1% last season. That profile just doesn't tend to work out regardless of the tools you have. If you're swinging that much, it's going to be exposed against better pitching. Where the optimism comes in is there were rumors that his approach, or he was working on his approach prior to the AFL, and that's what he wanted to work on at the Arizona Fall League. And then he went to the Arizona Fall League, he hit 359, he hit 2 home runs, he struck out only 15 times, and he walked 11 times. The walk number was such a difference. I mean, he only walked 32 times total last year in 125 games. And so for him to walk 11 times in 18 games out in Arizona, I mean, you can comment on the pitching quality that was out there, whatever, but he was facing lower minor pitcher quality for a lot of last season too, and he couldn't walk there either. So that's really an optimistic outlook, because if he refines that approach, there are some tools there. There's good speed, really good speed for fantasy managers to know about. And the contact skills, like I said, were good. And so if he's able to make contact more on pitches that aren't hitter's pitches, like it doesn't matter how good your contact rate is, if you're swinging at a slider 5 feet out of the zone, you're going to roll it over to the third baseman or ground out to the first baseman. Like, it's not going to help you produce the results that you want to see. But if he can keep up and build on that plate discipline that he showed off in the Arizona Fall League, there's good line drive rates there. I think that'll help his ground ball rate a lot, because he won't be swinging at pitchers' pitches. And then there's really good speed. And so I still don't think he is a great fantasy prospect, but I think he's somebody that I wouldn't be shocked if he shows better results than he did in 2020 5, and we see him build on that. He was a high first round pick, like you said. So he's got the draft pedigree there. Now it's just about putting it all together.
Do you think the power kind of becomes anything for him?
I don't think it's huge, but I think a lot of it also boils down to swinging at pitcher's pitches. You're not going to hit a lot of home runs when you're swinging at bad pitches. And so if his pitch selection improves, I don't think he's got 20 home run power even. I mean, the raw power is given a 50 grade. I don't think it's 20 homer power, but I think he can get in that 15 to 18 home run range. He can steal you 30 bases. The contact skills are good. So I don't want to say he's going to hit 300. I think he's still very aggressive at the plate. But if he can hit 275, 30 steals, 15 to 18 homers, I think there's a realistic world where that happens if he keeps this plate discipline going in the right direction.
So the next guy that we're going to talk about is the second Pirates prospect that we're going to talk about today. And another guy who is very highly drafted, just like Connor Griffin. But even though we've been familiar with him for a while, his stock, I feel like, has kind of oscillated a lot along the way and kind of just continues to be on a steady downward decline despite the ups and downs. And that's Termar Johnson, I think, pretty much second base only at this point. What are you seeing in terms of, you know, where Johnson's at right now after spending the whole season in Double-A last year?
It's kind of weird. It's like people loved his game power. I was always like, he's too undersized. Like, he's got really good bat speed. He gets around, but the odds of a 5'8" player. I mean, I wrote an article a couple of years ago, I think, on it. Like, just the, or I put a tweet or something. The odds of that working out just are not statistically high. And so you're making a bet on a player's raw skill set, and it looked like he had that. And now it's like the contact skills weren't great. The strikeouts were high, and now the contact skills have gotten better. I mean, that's the optimistic view to take. Improved his contact rate to 75.1% last season. He lowered his swing percentage to 43.8. I mean, that doesn't give us a ton of insight into the pitches he was swinging at, but contact rate better, swing rate down. You assume he's a little bit less aggressive, a little bit more selective at the dish. And he's still only 21 years old. Like, I feel like Termar Johnson has been around forever, like years and years and years. And he's not 22 until June. So there's that. He stole 20 bases again last season. The concerning part there is his success rate kind of dropped a good amount. He got caught 12 times. So that's not the most ideal. But the contact rates are there. The walk rate is there. And the power disappeared. I want to say he had a shoulder or thumb injury last year. Somebody can check me on that. I want to say he had an injury last year or the year before, and I'm just wondering if he wasn't fully right, if something was still bothering him, or if it really zapped his power, and we'll see if he continued to just not be there in 2026.
Yeah, so with the kind of the changes in the profile, it seems like it's really an OBP first profile at this point. Do you kind of only see him as an asset in those formats, or like what depth of an average, you know, I guess we'll say keeper dynasty format that uses average, like how deep of a format there do you kind of project him to be a useful player in?
At least a 12 team, probably a 14 team league. He's like a fine prospect. Yeah, he had a hand injury last year.
I think got hit in the hand with a fastball.
Yeah, I knew it was something. He also dealt with a knee injury last year. This is Google AI, so don't knee injury and a left foot bone bruise last year. So part of me just wonders if he wasn't healthy last year and you saw the power really disappear. I mean, the home run per fly ball rates were really good early, and then they've just kind of dropped off. So I feel like 14 team league is probably where he will still hold value. The contact rates have improved, especially in on-base leagues. He's gonna walk. He's walked throughout his career. I don't think he'll ever reach that power ceiling that dynasty managers really dreamed about when he was first drafted. I feel like people were like, oh, he's a great power hitter. I don't think he has the size for that. I think he's more of an average runner, but I think he can hit 15 to 20 homers. I think he can steal 15 to 20 bases. I think the contact skills are pretty good. So I don't hate the profile. It's just kind of difficult to get super excited about the profile at this point.
Well, we're going to move from Termar Johnson to another guy who I think the stock has fallen quite a bit. And that's Ethan Salas, who feels like he's been in like top 100 prospect conversations ever since he was signed by the Padres back in 2023. Still, according to some sites, you know, the number one prospect in their organization. He was in AA for about 10 games last season. But as you kind of mentioned the article, it wasn't that impressive of a 10-game stint. And if you look at the roster for the Padres, they currently have Freddie Fermin and Luis Campusano as their catchers. So there's not really a lot that's blocking him. I think maybe he's probably the only thing that's blocking himself now from really making a run into the majors. But how do you explain the dip from Salas? And, you know, again, he's only 19, so there's still probably some growth there in his game. But do you think he kind of gets back to reclaiming that top prospect status that I think a lot of people were hoping for him, you know, last year, the year before, things like that?
I wish I could give better insight on Ethan Salas. I mean, we haven't seen him play in so long. Like, he played 10 games last year, but what can you make from a 10-game sample in 2023? He played 66. He looked terrible in 2024 and 111. The age-to-level production still hasn't been bad. And so at a certain point, you kind of trust those scouting him every day or scouting him professionally for a living. You trust major league organizational views on him, and you trust that the glove is going to carry him to the major leagues. I mean, the Padres have a zero catching. I mean, Freddie Fermin, is he still there?
He's currently penciled as the starter on roster resource. I don't know how to believe that, but yeah, he's still there.
he's not the worst catcher that they've had in the last couple of years. Well, they had Martin Maldonado and
Tarantini was there for a little bit.
Freddie Fermin is not the worst offensive production they could be trotting out back there. But there's really nothing blocking him. You trust the glove is going to get him there. The Padres have a zero at offense at catcher anyway. So why not see what Salas has if he's this world-renowned defensive backstop? Offensively, I genuinely just don't know what to make of him. He's young still. What, he's only 19 still, or is he 20 now? 19?
I think he's 19 right now still, yeah.
Yeah, 20 in June. The contact skills have looked good throughout his professional career. You haven't seen that translate to much power, but the home run per fly ball rate wasn't terrible in 2024. It was kind of close to league average. He gets to his pull side well. His pull side numbers have always been there. And so there are the tools there. There's the prospect pedigree there. And you just kind of hope it all clicks, because I think if it does, this is a guy that was like the next great thing. He's going to be the next best catching prospect since, I don't even know, Buster Posey, Yadier Molina. Like, he was supposed to be this guy. And so I don't really know what to make from a confidence level that he turns into that guy. I think there's a good chance he debuts next season if he's healthy, just because they need him. And at this point, they've kind of waited long enough. I feel like he's been around for years. But I don't know. I don't think it's a terrible base. I think you can buy low in dynasty leagues for those that are trying to do so. Take a shot. I mean, all these minor leaguers are wild cards anyway. I would rather take a shot with somebody with the prospect pedigree of Salas versus some other players. So I would not bet on him being a star. Don't acquire him for a star price. He's not worth drafting in 2026 redraft leagues, but he's somebody to keep an eye on. If he starts playing well and he's moving, he's in AA and he's swinging the bat well, and the Padres are getting nothing from Fermin, I mean, he'll show up on the stash list, I'm sure, at some point if that all happens.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. You know, let's just say 600 plate appearance pace, right? I mean, I don't think he's going to be going to play a full season in the majors. So if you're going to project like a 600 plate appearance pace for Salas, are we thinking like double digit homers here? Are we, you know, what could be like kind of the best case scenario for him?
At a ceiling or like 2026 if he started?
I think ceiling. Yeah. Let's just like talk ceiling for him, since I don't think he's going to play a full season in 2026.
I think he could hit for average. The line drive rate is good. The contact skills are good. The plate discipline's good. So I think somewhere at a ceiling value, probably 270-ish. Okay. I think, like I said, the home run per fly ball rate wasn't bad in 2023. Sorry, I said 2024 earlier. It was terrible in 2024, 3.1%. It wasn't bad in 2023, and he gets to his pull side well. So I think there's 15 to 17 home runs in there. I don't know how likely that is to unlock. I didn't get a ceiling, though. He's a 275-ish hitter. He's going to hit 15 to 17 home runs. Solid catching prospect. He even stole 10 bases in 2024. I mean, I don't know how much speed you can really project, but he might steal a handful of bases for fantasy managers, too.
Yeah, I did see that those speed numbers. Like, oh, maybe he's JT Realmuto a little bit or something like that. but yeah, well, thanks again for coming on the pod, Matt, to talk about National League prospects. As you mentioned, I mean, you guys covered what, like 40 to 50 guys in this article, so we are basically just scraping the tip of the iceberg here. But before we let you go, just yeah, how can people kind of follow you on social media or kind of follow what you're doing with Pitcherlist? Yeah, let the people know.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Heckman_Matt115. Not as active as I used to be on there. Still try to post my articles. Still try to post something helpful for those in the Dynasty community a few times a month, little tidbits. And then you can follow all my work at Pitcherlist on the Dynasty page. That's where it's all going. All the work from the Dynasty team, all the work that they're putting out constantly. Like I said, every day this month, we've been putting out articles. And then we'll have work February, March throughout the regular season. So you can find all of my Dynasty work over there.
Cool. And I have to ask, how are you feeling about your Phillies this offseason?
Abysmal. you run it back three times in a row expecting different results. I don't know what I want them to do, though. I mean, I wanted Bichette, I guess, because he was 26.
Sure.
And that hurt. But at a certain point, it's like all good teams that aren't the Dodgers, like you have to have an infusion of youth and you have to count on the young players to eventually contribute. Mm-hmm. And so when you have two guys that are top 15 prospects on most lists, Andrew Painter and Adam Miller,
yep.
You have them at the upper levels of the major leagues. You have Justin Crawford, who I am not bought into, but he should be a good real life player at the very mm-hmm. least, even if it doesn't translate for fantasy as people hope it will. But you have to count on those younger players to make an impact. If you look down the stretch, Bohm played really well down the stretch. Stott underwent a swing change and played really well down the stretch. Marsh played really well after he didn't have a hit all of April. And so, like, you hope that those numbers just continue, but every year it's the same story. And then the lights are too bright for Alec Bohm hitting fourth or whatever you want to say. So I don't know. It feels like we got worse from last year and are expecting to get better. So sure. I'm not super optimistic right now. That's the least.
Well, hopefully somebody can turn around a little bit in the next couple of months for you so that the season's a little bit more exciting to follow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again, everyone, to listening to this episode. That wraps it up for us. Again, you can follow us at ThisWeekPL on Twitter. Our email is thisweekplpod@gmail.com. If you've got any questions, you can send it there or, of course, the Discord as well. You can follow myself on Twitter at TheJohnCa. You can follow Patrick at P_Fitzgerald99. Obviously, give us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Follow us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you find your podcasts. Feel free to give us a follow review if you like the show. That is going to wrap it up for this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. We'll be back next time with another episode. But for Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.